This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Oh my gosh, we're back for another week of the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? You've got Mark Becker here as your, you know, trusted host, or I hope you trust me. Anyway, I have a fantastic every week we try to bring you the best of the best. And let me tell you, I think this dude here is probably the smartest person I've ever spoken to. And it's always, you know, if it's my goal in anything that I do is I want to be the dumbest person in the room. Because then I think that I will pick up on things and I will learn. As long as you can be that sponge, being the dumbest person in a room is never, ever a bad thing. I've got a guy, Jeff Cabaservis. He is the Vice President of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center in Washington, D.C. What's up, sir?
Hey, good to be with you, Mark. I got to say that given that intro, I am going to give me 5 minutes before I do something really dumb to say.
Oh, I'm not done with my intro yet because, you know, I got to know you when I wrote a nice scathing article about Ron Johnson. And I was brought into a couple Zoom calls with you and your team. And it was really, I was taken back because I was really the dumbest person in the room on that thing. But to see what you have done, you've written several books, including Rule and Ruin, which I picked up last night, actually. I saw that and I'm like, I need to read this. And your work revolves around centrism, moderation, history of the GOP, which is like, hey, that's what we do here. And in your career, you've written for the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Political, The Guardian, assistant professor at Yale. So, I mean, we can keep going on and on here. And so anything dumb that you do in the next 5 minutes is totally, it's good. So tell me, what is the Niskanen Center?
The Niskanen Center is a sort of medium-sized think tank in Washington, D.C. And we had sort of an interesting origin story. Most people have heard of any think tank in D.C. They've heard of Brookings, and they've also heard of the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian organization. And most of the people who formed the Niskanen Center came out of Cato. Wow. They were dyed-in-the-wool libertarians. But then over time, they started maybe getting a little less sure of their faith. And in particular, the issue of climate was a big problem for Jerry Taylor, who ended up becoming the founder of the Niskanen Center. For like 20 years, he'd been paid to be Cato's lead climate change denial spokesperson.
Oh, wow.
And was nationally known in that role and was kind of lionized by a lot of, you know, very right-wing groups. And then one day he had this sort of Saul on the road to Damascus moment of conversion. He said, actually, you know, climate change is happening. It's caused by humans. It's a problem. We should do something about it. So he promptly got forced out of Cato and with some other like-minded people formed the Niskanen Center. And it used to have a pretty libertarian organization, Niskanen. And I would say we're still pro-market and I would generally consider us to be on the center right. But we've dropped a lot of the original libertarianism that characterized us when we were founded about 10 years ago.
And it's, what's interesting is, you know, if you talk about what you guys do to the average Joe Blow on the street, they have no idea what the Niskanen Center is. But you talk to someone who's on the Hill, you know, member of Congress, staff, whatever, they all are very well aware of you guys and what you do because you are very influential and you know, the things that you've done and been involved with is it's very meaningful.
Well, thanks. You know, what we try to do, to be honest, which maybe does differentiate us in Washington, is that we try to speak to people on both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
In Congress. We talk to Republicans as well as Democrats and especially are involved with their staff. And what we're trying to do, to use a fancy inside the Beltway term, is to provide legislative subsidy. When they want to govern, we want to help them do what they want to do. And that's what our policy experts are here to do. I'm not a policy expert. I actually am one of these sort of free floating public intellectuals who hangs out there at 35,000 feet and tries to make sense of it all. And I'm not sure I always succeed or even succeed very often, to be honest.
Well, let's try to make sense of some of this. I want to start by kind of looking at where did the GOP, how did we get here?
You know, oh, man.
Right.
Where do you want to start?
Well, and you know, I don't know, because my theory, and I talked to a couple people, and I don't think it was Michael Steele, and I said, well, you know, this, it really, for me, when I saw it going into hyperdrive, it was Sarah Palin with like the death panels of the Obamacare stuff and all like that was, but it goes back so much farther.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not to go back into the whole history of the Republican Party, but the party's has almost always been a factionally organized party. At any given moment in the party's history, there's going to be a relatively moderate faction and a relatively conservative faction. But those identities change a lot over time. What you really start to see with the rise of the conservative movement as we understand it is that a lot of people in that faction did not want to play ball with the other factions. And the goal of the people around Bill Buckley and eventually Barry Goldwater starting in the 50s and 60s was to force everybody else out of the party. And, you know, I recently reviewed Max Boot's biography of Ronald Reagan, and it's a fairly critical biography. I think it's a good biography. It's solid. It reflects more than a dozen years of research and hard work. But I think Max somewhat underestimated how good of a politician Reagan was within the Republican Party in raising up the conservative faction, giving them power within the Republican Party, which they had really for the first time ever when he came into office in 1980, but also preventing them from destroying everybody else who didn't agree with them on everything, and creating space for a big tent party that would include moderates as well as conservatives. And over time, that art was lost. And you know what we're seeing now is in a curious way a repetition of history. You know, eventually the conservatives, once they didn't have Ronald Reagan's guidance anymore, forced out those moderates as they had really been wanting to do for so long. And for a while they ruled the party on their own. And this actually cost them the ability, I think, to get popular majorities in presidential yes. elections. However, now what we're seeing is the Trumpites are forcing out the Reaganites. So what comes around goes around. And they're experiencing the same thing that they did to the moderates back in the day. But now, actually, we're talking about an even smaller popular base for the Republican Party if the Trumpers succeed in having their way.
Was it Reagan himself that did that, or did he have really good advisors, or who was behind kind of that big tent thing? Because I subscribe to the big tent theory. I think that's amazing, and we should get back there. But that is not where the Republican Party is right now. It's litmus tests and loyalty pledges and all of that stuff that rules the day with the GOP.
You know, I really do think it was Ronald Reagan more than his advisors who understood the importance of that big tent. And, you know, Reagan wasn't always that way. He first came onto the political scene in 1964 when he gave a speech for Barry Goldwater. Yep. And he was not about coexistence. You know, he was with Barry Goldwater, which is that, you know, if you're not with us, you're against us. But, you know, people tend to forget this. But Barry Goldwater lost massively to Lyndon Johnson. And that also wiped out the Republican Party really down the ticket. And that gave Lyndon Johnson the opportunity to pass what amounted to a second New Deal. It gave the Democrats a bigger opening than they had had since the 1930s. And that was a strategic disaster for the Republican Party. And I think Ronald Reagan learned from that, you know, ideological purity is actually a damaging thing in politics. You actually need to win big popular majorities for your way of thinking. And he also had a saying that a lot of his aides repeated, which is that Reagan said, you know, I want to get 80% of what I want rather than go off the cliff with my flag flying. And he didn't actually really have a lot of respect for the extremists, as he saw it, who were willing to accept defeat, maybe even eager to accept defeat, rather than get most of what they wanted.
Yeah, here we're talking with Jeff Cabaservice, Vice President of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center. How was Reagan received by the left?
Well, the left never really understood what Ronald Reagan was about and, you know, always saw him as this crazy cowboy figure who was going to take America back to the dark ages and so forth. You know, it's only in relatively recent years that there's been a strange new respect on the left Ronald Reagan, because they can see the difference between Trump and Reagan.
Right. And so, okay, we have Goldwater, we have Reagan, and then we had Richard Nixon, who, I mean, other than, you know, that whole thing, he was actually pretty... I mean, when was the last time he won? What was it? Almost every state in his second election.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, he had a massive landslide in 1972.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, I mean, but Richard Nixon, we tend also to forget this, was somebody who had a very liberal side to him. Yeah. In fact, my friend John Price wrote a book based on his experience in the Nixon administration, which is called The Last Liberal Republican. And in some ways, you can actually see that, because although Nixon, I think, was at heart more of a populist and, you know, had the Southern strategy in place to get the South voting for Republican, which, you know, ultimately paid long-term dividends for the party, although obviously that came with costs. But, you know, he also was responsible for the creation of the EPA and OSHA and a lot of other things that are just absolute bete noirs to conservatives nowadays.
Right. And so it's crazy how, you know, Republicans were, they govern as like the minority party that has to, you know, vote by, win by suppressing others, instead of like, hey, these are our ideas. We think big, we do big, but we can explain why we're doing this. And where is that today?
I mean, again, I'm afraid this comes back to the uniqueness of Ronald Reagan. You know, I mean, the Republicans truly were in the political wilderness once Franklin Roosevelt came into office. And not only did they have a hard time winning the presidency from the 1930s onwards, but, you know, it was 40 years before Republicans really had control of the House of Representatives again. And even then, you know, they only regained control by Newt Gingrich deciding that he would destroy Congress as an institution so that Republicans could inherit the ashes. And, you know, there's obvious problems that come from that. But I'm afraid, you know, there's never really been, aside from the Reagan years, a sense of Republican confidence that their ideas had a majority of popular support, that they could persuade people who were at the margins, and that they could govern more effectively than the Democrats.
It's interesting. I got to know, when I was chairman of the GOP, I got to know our Congressman Reed Ribble really well. And when he, you know, he was swept into power into the Tea Party wave. But when, you know, he joined No Labels, and he went as someone who, I mean, he didn't abandon his conservative principles, but he went into this or this group to talk about how we can work together. And he was excoriated by the base here in town.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it shouldn't be this divisive, frankly. You know, and Americans throughout history, I think, understood that everyone's got some conservative and liberal impulses within them. You know, left and right run through the human heart. And there is no one best way to accomplish any of the goals of government. And furthermore, to govern really requires you to compromise with people who don't agree with you and to make your case to them and to work with them. But, you know, in recent years, as politics has become some weird combination of entertainment and theology. And the idea now is that you are just betraying everything that is true, good, and beautiful by talking to members of the evil opposing side.
Right.
And that's not a recipe for successful democracy.
No, you're exactly right. And we're going to continue this discussion. We're going to map out the 2024 election here with Jeff Cabaservis from the Niskanen Center right after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. You've got the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We've got my friend Jeff Cabaservis. He's the Vice President of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center. How do people find out about what you guys are involved with, by the way?
Well, they can always Google us.
Yeah, Google. Okay, Google.
But, you know, I mean, more generally, you're right. I mean, maybe it's not a good thing, but we do tend to produce a lot for the Inside the Beltway community or people who are very wired in politically. Sometimes our pieces get picked up on a bigger scale. We're actually starting a magazine called Hypertext, which you find online. And there's some stuff here that, you know, the average person might actually even enjoy reading. And some of our pieces, like, you know, some of our analyses, particularly of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, did get a lot of traction and, you know, went big on Twitter and all the rest of that. But, you know, it's sort of the nature of policy studies that they tend to find a fairly small audience.
Well, that's where I think it's really exciting because, you know, to have you on the show, we can kind of get into the weeds and about stuff. And I want to map out. So let's talk about the 2024 election. You know, that's Oh God, it's way sooner than what I like to admit. And speaking of admitting, if Trump loses, he will never admit that.
Yeah.
What's his play?
I mean, I think you just laid it out. He wins by losing, and he wins by winning.
Right.
If he wins, hurrah! He proclaims a mandate from the masses and does what he wants. And if he loses, then he claims that he was robbed, and who knows what he unleashes in the pursuit of trying to get back in.
What are, you know, my concern is 4 years ago, it was just a hot mess. I personally own a Four Seasons Total Landscaping t-shirt.
And
because there was so many, it was so sloppy. They've got 4 years to get it right. If he loses, what is the path to send it to the states or do whatever? What does he do?
So, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of real evil geniuses working on Trump's side. I do think there are people around him who are not going to hesitate when he asks them to do what Mike Pence wouldn't do.
Correct.
Say.
Right.
But that's not quite the same thing as being able to overthrow the Constitution just with a snap of the fingers. But, you know, I think that if it comes down to it, here's how it'll play out. First of all, I wouldn't advise staying up late on election night to know the results, because I just don't think we're going to know them. And, you know, part of that is through conscious design. The key state in this election is Pennsylvania, as it was really kind of the key state last time around. And the Republican-controlled Pennsylvania legislature has decided that they are not going to allow the counting of absentee ballots until the end of Election Day, which means that it's going to be, I don't know, days, weeks before we know the results from Pennsylvania. But what also will be the case is, as with the last election, you know, most of the in-person votes, which will be counted immediately, will be Republican, and most of the mail-in votes will be Democrat. So right there is the groundwork for Trump saying, let's say at 11 p.m. on election night, I won. And unlike 2020, this then becomes Republican orthodoxy and is repeated by virtually every Republican official in the land. And this makes it much more difficult for then Pennsylvania election officials to come out and say, well, actually, once we counted all of the stuff that came in by mail, actually, Kamala Harris won the state. So, you know, that's what might give rise to the alternative slates of electors being accepted by the state legislatures in red states around the country and other sort of disastrous constitutional scenarios.
Why would the Republican officials themselves not want to count the votes ahead of time and avoid these late night ballot dumps? Why would they do that?
Because chaos is Trump's friend. And the more chaotic the situation, the more persuasive his case to his followers that Democrats are trying to rig something behind the scenes.
So that's like quasi evil geniusy, you know.
You know,
if yeah. It's like
there's
evil
a certain
genius,
low cunning to it.
Light beer, you know, as you were just in Oktoberfest. That's the light beer version of evil genius. So that's done with the intent to know what the next three steps are to say, hey, stop the count. He won Pennsylvania. Okay, so let's say that happens. Walk down that path. What happens next?
So there's a lot of constitutional lawyer people who you could talk to who would have a much better idea than I do
okay.
of how this might happen. But, you know, I think it is, again, the question of whether Republican-controlled state legislatures can be persuaded to submit alternate states slates of electors in favor of Trump before the, I think it's December 11th deadline when their electoral votes have to be submitted. And, you know, that is difficult because the Constitution does actually provide for that possibility. And the law is sufficiently vague that people could do this under the cover of electoral law and say that they're following the rules. But, you know, it is a real question as to whether you're going to get a repeat of 2020 when what you saw was enough Republicans in positions of power, whether that be a Secretary of State, whether that be on electoral commissions, whether that be in state legislatures, saying, no, we need to follow the time prescribed rules of the game. It might not be the case this time around.
So once again, we are headed towards a path where we likely will have to rely on Republicans, better angels, you know, to do the right thing.
I mean, you know, let me stipulate here that no one knows who's going to win this election, even if all of the rules were scrupulously followed. I've seen any number of polls that say we're in a 50-50 nation, and who knows, flip a coin as to who wins this. So Trump could very well win this election outright, in which case all of the resistance that Republican officials maybe are prepared to put up will be moot. But I think, you know, there's also that other flip of the coin which could come up for Kamala Harris and the Democrats. And, you know, the thing we've been dreading, frankly, is a close election, but it looks like that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, I know. It would be nice to have a mandate one way or the other. But, you know, and I think you said recently that, you know, we talk about how our form of government is the best, or, you know, people talk about that, but we really have some of the oldest, the most antiquated constitutional government foundations of any nation in the world. And so,
yeah, that's true. And, go ahead. You know, the Electoral College has never worked once the way it was intended to work by the founders.
What do you mean?
Of all the things they got wrong, you know, the idea that the Electoral College would actually be a kind of check of wise men on the populist passions of the masses and sort of balance out the popular vote, it never worked that way.
What's the better way to do it? Just popular vote?
You know, the popular vote is what just about everyone else in the world, who's a democracy, has in place. I don't see that the system we have now would work less well than the popular vote.
Right, I agree. I mean, that's every other election from, you know, county dog catcher to governors and all of that. Yeah, it's a popular vote thing, other than what we've got at the top. I don't know if there's any appetite to change something like that.
I suspect there isn't. And, you know, changing the constitutional structure is a very difficult time, even when the country is much more united than it is right now.
Right.
And I mean, to be honest, I also do have great reverence for the constitutional structure that the founders put in place. And, you know, I actually think our system of checks and balances through most of our history has actually worked to our immense benefit. But there are, as you say, some aspects of the 18th century constitutional design that have aged better than others.
Right. You know, it's also especially tough where you have someone that's uniquely, we got about 30 seconds left, it's uniquely poised to try to challenge that Constitution and put it through its stresses as much as they possibly can, like we have in Donald Trump. The next segment here, we're going to talk about what happens with the GOP and where we go from here. We're talking with Jeff Kabasservice, VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center. I'm Mark Becker. This is The Rational Revolution.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
It's a good song. You let it rock for a little bit. Rational Revolution, Mark Becker here. Got my friend Jeff Kabasservice, VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center. I appreciate your time, and I really thank you for your insight. And I think you can articulate some of these things so much better than most. So thank you.
No, thanks. It's great to talk to you, and I get a little bit of side of classic rock as well. R.I.P. Brad Delp.
Right on. So this is the long segment, if you will, and I wanted to have this discussion here. I was watching an interview recently where you talked about the Republican Party, and you said that you don't believe that Donald Trump has many true believers in the GOP. So if we're going to walk down the path of Trump loses, which I do hope happens, what then happens to the GOP?
Well, you know, I suppose I need to clarify here. You know, Donald Trump has an awful lot of followers out in this great land of ours who hang on every word he says and take every word as gospel. What I was referring to specifically was the Republican cohort in Congress.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of these people, let's be honest, grew up as Reaganite true believers. And, you know, that was the crucible in which they were formed, and they met every one of the litmus tests that post-Reagan conservatives laid out for them. And Trump demanded that they reverse themselves on an awful lot of those points. Yeah. You know, and you can run them down just as well as I can, you know, from being free traders to being protectionists, from being internationalists to being xenophobes and restrictionists, from being accepting of people wanting to come to this great land of ours to keeping them out, and from being opposed to the Soviet Union and its expansionist designs to supporting Putin's incursion into Ukraine.
Setting COVID test kits during the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, Ronald Reagan is, you know, would be shocked and horrified, I think, by how many of his devotees have turned against the lessons that he tried to impress upon them. So, you know, in their heart of hearts, most of these Republicans in Congress are willing to go along with Trump because the consequences of defying him and his followers are just too painful. And maybe even dangerous. Mm-hmm. But do they really believe it? And if Trump's iron hand suddenly were to lift from the nape of their necks, might they do something else? Well, they might.
So my question is, how do you, you know, as someone who's ran for office and helped out dozens of other candidates, how do you take back, you know, kind of that whole country thing? Because we had a guy that... That is running for Reed Ribble's old seat. His name is Tony Weed. And there was a primary, and there was three people that were in it. You know, a military veteran who was a state senator. He was up against a different state senator who's horribly unqualified. His name is Andre Jacques. There was one person who was so well qualified and would do a fantastic job, but he didn't win because the other guy that did win had Trump endorsed on the top of his yard sign. And no one knew who the hell this guy was, but he was Trump endorsed. So how does the GOP move from that and take the party back from that? You have to get through a primary first. How do they even do that? Is it possible? How do we modernize? How do we break from that stigma and get qualified good people through the primary process to be able to, you know, put together and put out that moderate platform?
I mean, this is the $64,000 question mark. And, you know, I honestly don't think real changes are coming to the GOP if Trump wins.
No. Yeah, no.
If Trump wins, then it's Trumpian populism
from now
until the end of time, really. And furthermore, Trump is going to continue to be a very important player in the Republican Party no matter what happens. And the Trump endorsement may matter as more than anything else for a long time to come, as long as Trump is around. You know, however, again, this is like really not the way that American politics has ever operated in the past.
No.
You know, and a lot of it has to do with the way that, as I'm sure you know very well, that we've gerrymandered ourselves into a corner here. Yeah. You know, but ultimately, there isn't really a distinctive way, Republican or Democrat, to do most of the work of government, to clear the roads, to keep the businesses running. I mean, it's really a case where it shouldn't matter that someone really hates Democrats more than the next candidate, and that's what you're going for in terms of their responsibilities. So, you know, my hope is that Republicans can actually accept the good hand they've been dealt in the future, which is the country I believe is a center-right country.
Yes.
And there actually, you know, are a lot of the issues out there that work for Republicans. They are generally more trusted on issues of business and the economy. Americans are very upset about what seems to be an open border. That's an issue which they can use rationally to their mm-hmm. advantage, as long as they don't go too far and talk about rounding up and deporting millions of people who are here using the National Guard in ways that would involve bloodshed and civil unrest. Mm-hmm. I think just being normal Republicans would usually be to the great advantage of people in most races. But again, the problem is they've got to get through the primary election. And what would be great to see, frankly, is if more of the normal Republicans, registered Republicans, would start voting in those primaries and would start actually asking people questions about how you intend to govern, not how do you intend to go on Fox News or OAN and raise the hair on the back of people's necks with your crazy statements. But how do you actually intend to govern and get things done?
Well, and it's, you know, you talk about the normal Republicans. Wisconsin is such a good petri dish for this. I mean, you look at someone like Reince Priebus, who he was a normal Republican. You know, when he was here as the chairman, and I met him, I know him, and I should say I knew him. Because now what he has become is you know, the Kool-Aid drinker of Kool-Aid drinkers, and he hands out the Kool-Aid wherever he goes. And it's really dangerous stuff to drink.
Yeah. And you know, it comes across as inauthentic, too,
yes,
because everyone knows that's not who he is. This is just opportunism and you know, kind of greed to advance for his own personal sake. He'll say anything to get ahead. That's not an attractive model, to be honest.
No, and we have our favorite governor, Tommy Thompson, was like that as well. You know, and I've known him, and he was very close last time around to not endorsing Donald Trump and to endorsing the other guy. And now we had him on the show, and he was talking about how we need to give Donald Trump a chance. And I asked him, I said, "Governor, we did. And you know, what? And you know, we talked to Michael Steele. He doesn't think that the GOP survives this if Trump loses.
You know, in a two-party system, I think the GOP will always be around in some form or other. You know, the question is whether it can connect to the best parts of its heritage. I mean, it's worth mentioning to your audience that I'm still a registered Republican
in
Washington,
right,
D.C., for all the good that does me, you know. And you know, my apartment's virtually a shrine to great Republican leaders of the past. Not just Reagan, but, you know, especially Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes.
And you know, I don't think Dwight Eisenhower is an obsolete model of a bygone Republican Party. I frankly think that we are in a Cold War with China, and that we need to actually look at 100%. The playbook that Dwight Eisenhower gave us in terms of how we compete effectively, and especially how we bring our allies along with us, because powerful as we are, we cannot do this without our allies. So, you know, I think the Republican Party needs to just get back to becoming the big tent party that Ronald Reagan wanted it to be, to a party that, you know, is probably going to be conservative, but also will actually better reflect the fact that it's moving toward being a working class party and a multi-ethnic, multi-racial working class party at that, one that potentially could have broad popular appeal, and a Republican Party that could actually win a popular vote in the presidential election, which it has not done for seven out of the last eight elections.
Yeah, it keeps tripping over
itself. Much more,
It
would be much more popular if Donald Trump simply didn't amp up the bloodlust of his most devoted followers and could somehow or other tack back toward the center. Now, he's not capable of doing that, but the next Republican leader ought to be.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I'm talking with the Jeff Cubis Service here, VP of Political Studies for the Niskanen Center. There was a call, that a Zoom call that you guys did, I watched, it's on YouTube, post the election last time around. And your colleague, Christy DePena, brilliantly said in that Zoom call, this was days after the election, that there has to be some sort of both parties in the moderate wing need to understand that they are no longer united by a common enemy. And so if Trump does lose, you know, I that's why I think, you know, maybe the GOP does stick around. But all of these people that are now branded with that MAGA hat, they got to go. You know, we have to do some sort of a, I don't want to say cleanse, but we have, you know, there has to be some sort of reckoning with what they did.
I guess I am hesitating a little bit in responding to that. I mean, you know, what tied the Republican Party together, what tied the conservative movement together, was the common enemy of the Soviet Union and communism.
Yep.
And there's never been a kind of uniting force like that in the years since the wall fell and the Soviet Union dissolved. And, you know, for a while it looked like Islamic terrorism could provide that glue, but now it doesn't. And, you know, the glue, to the extent that there is one in the Republican Party right now, is a venomous hatred of half of America that votes Democrat.
Right.
And that's not ultimately a kind of motivating force that can lead to successful governing, because if you want to repress and destroy half the population, by definition, you are not interested in governing in the interest of the whole country. And, you know, the way I look at it is that there's some people who should not be allowed to become leaders. And, you know, leadership in government is a complicated technical business, and not everyone is good at it. And there are some people who actively damage our collective work of governing ourselves. Those people ought to be kept out of office. And if they're in office, they ought to be removed. But, you know, we all have to live with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every member of my family is voting Trump. And I've got to live with my family, and I love my family. And in the end, I want to find common ground for us all. And I think that will be more possible once Donald Trump's unique and malign influence has declined in both the country and the nation as a whole.
You know, I've said this so many times. Where I am, I'm a fiscal conservative with a social conscience, and I think that's where the GOP ought to be, because there are conservative arguments for things like climate, and there are conservative arguments for things like letting women control what they do with their bodies and letting, you know, people who are gay marry the person that they love. If we can get over those things and get on to, a strong national security, strong national defense, you know, closing the border. Yes, those are issues that the Republican Party would win on. And those are issues that could, like you said, win a popular vote. But we can't get out of our own way time after time after time.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, this is where Trump is actually not a very good coalition manager, to be honest, because, you know, the barstool conservatives do not see eye to eye with the evangelical Christians.
Right.
And you have a Republican Party, which even under Trump is not really united. It's a bunch of really oppositional factions, and, you know, a Trump administration would just be a snake pit of competing egos and daggers in backs, and poison in coffee, you know?
Yeah.
And in a curious way, you know, if Trump were a better manager, he would be more successful as a politician, and his administration likely would be more successful as well. But because he isn't, people are competing with team suggestions and possibilities from Project 2025 on downward for what Trump might want. And Trump himself doesn't know, so he can't adjudicate in a way that successful party leaders have done in the past.
You know, it's funny, and that's the exact thing that some of the Trumpy people say. Oh, he's a business guy. He knows how to lead, and he knows, you know, all this stuff. And yeah, it's wild. It's a crazy time. So we got 30 seconds left. What do you think is going to happen? That's the $1 million question. We had a $64,000 question. 30 seconds. What do you think is going to happen?
Ah, shoot. You know, we all gave up being Nostradamus in 2016. I got no idea.
You got no idea.
You know, I mean, America, whether you're a believer or not, has had very providential fortune throughout its history. The right people have appeared at the right time to lead us through what seemed to be terrible moments. The 1930s was actually a much more dangerous situation, I think, than what we face now. Yeah. The 1970s, in their own way, in the late 60s, were much more chaotic, with families getting torn apart by these issues. I really hope that we will get through this moment as we have gone through dangerous moments in our national past.
Well, the one thing that I am grateful for is that we have people like you and the Niskanen Center guiding us through that as well. Jeff Kabasservice, thank you so very much for your time, and we should do this again soon.
Thank you, Mark. We should. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you very much. We'll be back on the Rational Revolution with my thoughts.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
What's up, revolutionaries? I like that. That's fun. Man, I feel like I got to take a breath. Yeah, compose myself. You know, it's like, holy crap. You know, that dude is smart. Jeff Kabasservice from the Niskanen Center. That was a lot. And I was definitely the stupidest person in the room for that discussion. So I'm very grateful for him and his time. And I hope to have him back, because as you could tell, he is a brilliant, brilliant thinker. He has meetings that he hosts that I sometimes go to. I went last week, where you get to kind of, there's some heavy hitters in that room. Again, I'm absolutely the dumbest person, but you know, they talk about where things are and all of that. And, yeah, my goodness, my thanks to him. And I hope you guys learned something too, but I want to talk a little bit about, stuff that we did hit on a little bit with Jeff, and that is, you know, kind of what is happening here with this movement? What really is going on, and why I loathe the Trump movement so much? And it's, I have an aunt. Okay, I've talked about this aunt before, and I love her very much. She is the kind of person that helped raise me and my brothers. There's four of us, and she was always lighthearted. She loved to have fun. She'd take us to the movies. You know, we would dance the Snoopy dance, and it was just, she was a towering figure in our lives, and loved her very much. And I talk about her like she's in the past, but she's not. She is still alive. And we had a Christmas gathering at my parents' house, I think it was last year, and she exclaimed to myself and a different aunt who's awesome. She listens to the show. Hi, Dana, what's up? And her kids, my cousins, that Joe Biden wasn't actually the president. And I was like, what? What are you? Oh, God, I know where this is going. And she said, oh, the commander in chief and the president are two different roles. And, you know, the Joe Biden doesn't speak in front of the seal and all this stuff. And I stood up to her. I was like, that is absolutely ridiculous. That is a lie. That's not true. Blah, 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 whatever. And she was saying this in front of people that are very young, including my Charlie and my aunt's Charlie, who are getting to know who they are, learning their place in the world and learning what the world is all about. And having some of that stuff said to them is so dangerous. It's wrong. And, you know, I don't know why, you know, I do this, but one of the things that I did was I tried to, after we got the kids out, try to engage her and learn about why she's saying these things. Because if I am going to be an effective communicator to try to bring common sense back to people, I need to learn where people are coming from. And so I talked to her, and I still do, but what I found out was horrifying. So here's some of the things that she's told me that she believes. All right, you ready? Drum roll. You didn't hear that, but I did a drum roll on the desk. So these are the conspiracies. Chemtrails, they're real. This is what she says. Chemtrails are real. Robert F. Kennedy knows the truth. She said that Donald Trump was appointed by God to be the president of the United States. She said that Joe Biden is actually deceased and was replaced by an actor. She believes this because she religiously, no pun intended, I guess, listens to this wingnut of a woman named Julie Green, who says that she is a prophet and she speaks to God. And some of the things she learns from Julie Green is this, that the two hurricanes that we just had are man-made, and there's precious metals in the mountains of Tennessee and North Carolina that the government wanted to get. She said that, you know, things like Trump won the election. Elites like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers inject adrenochrome from kidnapped children from Epstein Island. Like, yo, it's some, and I my list is not done. Oh yeah. And then this is the good one. This is a fun, the Illuminati and the cabal are interfering with elections. I like that one, but you know, and I laugh because it's absolutely ridiculous, but I loathe this movement because of all of this. And because of all of these things, I've lost my aunt and my kids have lost their aunt, but she's still alive, but I'm not going to have her around my kids when she's thinking and doing these things that she's thinking and doing. It's just not, it's not right. And what this movement has done is you take all of this nonsense, you take all of these conspiracy theories and they spin around you like this, like a tornado. And it's this constant ball of chaos that surrounds these people. And they shut out the news, and they shut out, you know, because the news is all lies. They shut out the truth. They shut out their family because we're all sheep and we haven't done our own research. They shut out the truth, and they cling to people who are so dangerous, like this prophet, you know, quote, Julie Green. I'm going to send this segment to her, and I hope she's listening. And if you are, Julie, you're a fraud, and you're hurting a lot of people. You don't talk to God, and you know it. And what you're doing is sick. And it's those types of scams, when people go down these rabbit holes, that's what leads to January 6th. And what terrifies me so much is, what if it happens on a bigger scale? What if we have that dust up and it inspires people in Michigan or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin? What happens if he does lose? What happens when you have all these prophets who are phony, like Julie Green, who said he's going to win, but then he loses? And now what do you do? Because they're all fraudsters. And this, the big question we have to answer in the next decade, and we talked about it with Jeff a little bit, is when do we stop being beholden to people who are not living in reality? When do we as a community stand up and stop accepting this and stop accepting, oh, well, it's okay to agree to disagree? Well, it is, but not when it comes to harming our future, harming our kids. That's not okay. When do we start saying that this is not okay? I had to get my family a security system this week because I've been outspoken and I've gotten threats. I had to register my address with our local police department because of swatting. You know, that's when someone calls the SWAT department and the freaking SWAT department shows up at your house. I had to do that. This is not normal, you guys. And we need to stop accepting it as it is. This stuff is dangerous, and it's getting so far out of hand, and it only will stop when common sense people like you revolutionaries start speaking up. Don't be afraid to speak up, because this is important. I mean, forget me and my family, but listen to yours. It's so important. Don't lose that faith. Don't lose your courage. Keep it up. I love you guys so very much. We're all in this together, baby. I'm Mark Becker, signing off. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. Again, thanks to Jeff Cabot Service from the Niskanen Center. My dear producer, Amanda, you're the best. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.